Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Futures are steady amid this earnings deluge today. Apple, Alphabet, Microsoft, McDonald's, Pfizer, Visa. We got the CEOs of Boeing, AMD, and Starbucks this hour. And we're going to get to all of that ahead of the Fed decision this afternoon. Let's kick off with Apple, though. Down in the pre-market, a warning about the global chip shortage and how that might impact future operations. Jim, along with this notion from Cook that COVID recovery, at least globally, is going to be an uneven path.
Well, I think that to not say that would be irresponsible when the CDC has made me feel like this N95. I'm no longer fooling around with anything else because the CDC and Mike Roman from 3M are telling you the N95. So what is he going to do? What's he supposed to do? He doesn't have everyone back in the office. It's uneven. As far as the chip shortage, not all fabs are equal. There'll be some fabs that don't want to lose Apple's business in the same way that Skyworks isn't going to suddenly say, hey, listen, Apple, you're out. So I'm not as bearish on the chip shortage as many others in the industry because guys are working around the clock to be able to create what's known as the full featured chip. It's no longer the dumb chip. It's full featured. So, David, I think that when you listen to AMD, yep. Lisa Su.
Yes, who we'll have on shortly.
Exactly. There are chip
Your second favorite Lisa.
Oh, depends on the day.
Right.
My wife's name is Lee. That was probably wrong.
Okay. She doesn't watch.
She doesn't watch either.
There's your first favorite Lisa.
She's from 10 blocks away from my favorite Lisa.
Yes, from my hometown, too.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. But what I think does matter, David, is that you can pontificate on the chip shortage, but you might be wrong and you might be too negative. And I thought it was incredible that they even had the chips that they got this quarter. I do think that there are many people who believe the chip shortage is going to come to an end by the end of Q3. And then you're going to say, why did I sell Apple? I mean, now there's a fellow, Tony Saganegi, has come on. And it's good to have him on once a week or twice a week because he's so rigorous.
Speaking of Apple and its stock price, I would love to sort of get your sense as to where things stand right now. The revenue growth, by the way, not just at Apple, but at Microsoft and at Alphabet in particular, 57%, by the way, constant currency at Google. Who's ever seen numbers like that?
No, the numbers are extraordinary.
21% at Microsoft and 36% revenue growth at Apple, not to mention $17.4948 billion in recurring revenue. But did it run up into the expectation for this quarter, and is it appropriately valued at, let's call it, 29, 30 times? Or is this still a good time, in your opinion, to buy the stock?
I think that it is a good time, particularly if this day goes as I think it is, which is that there are a lot of, I don't know if you listened to Steve Weiss yesterday. I mean, he was buying puts left and right. That's on Scott Wapner's show. I don't think that's necessarily going to be his way to go when I look at FANG. But I do think that when I listen to Apple and I talked to Tim Cook last night, along with Josh Lipton, I'd say as bullish as I've heard. And don't forget, the customer loyalty is so great that if they can't deliver the chips and therefore the phones this quarter, then you've got an even more elongated.
Yeah, well, it's
And by the way, they did not use the term super cycle.
You're loyal because you're a hostage. I mean, you're basically
hostage.
I spent 3 hours in an Apple store this weekend.
Hostage?
You know that they couldn't even let us buy a phone for 3 hours? We had to sit there and wait.
I was in the Fifth Avenue store yesterday. It was slamming. I did notice, Jim, 75% of watch customers were new to the product. And in China, 85% of watch customers are new to the category.
I asked him, why bother? How can it move the needle? And he said, well, do you think healthcare moves the needle? I said, yes. The watch is incredible. I find people wearing watches who've never even thought about wearing a watch, David. Take that.
The wearables numbers are enormous for the company. It's everything. It's 34 billion or something like that.
How long did you wait in line?
We put our name in. They couldn't see us for 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Have to schedule your appearance.
To buy an $800 phone.
David, let me send you a Samsung.
What company in the world makes you wait 3 hours to buy an $800 phone?
Why don't you go to Samsung?
By the way, when your kid
has
a 10 that didn't work 3 times, and they won't even take it back. I'm sorry. It was a rough weekend with Apple.
Well, David, I think there's lots of alternatives.
Yeah, there was an alternative. Stupid me. I should have gone to Verizon. That. I probably could have gotten the phone for
Verizon,
free.
AT&T's bought a million of them, or millions of them, you know, because AT&T's got to maintain.
I'm a moron.
AT&T has to cut the dividend in order to be able to buy an Apple phone.
Listen, when you have customers who are willing to wait 3 hours to actually spend $800 on your phone, then you're in a pretty good place.
Well, that's my point.
I know. Mine,
that's
too.
That's my point.
Mine, too.
Had you spent 5 hours, I'd pay $150.
By the way, if you put Apple, Google, Microsoft together, it's $57 billion in combined profit for the quarter. That's 30% ahead. It's $620 million a day in profit from three companies.
I mean, I think people have to go listen to the Alphabet call, to listen to Pinchot, what he says, to listen to Ruth. All right. I want to work at Alphabet. Period. End of story. I mean, they're making so much money and spending so little to make that money that I think we all want to work at Alphabet. By the way, cloud is going to be the next thing that they have. YouTube, they're reaching customers that no one else can reach in YouTube. Can I say that if someone was writing Pinchot's call, I would say, hey, listen, I want it to be the most positive call ever.
It would be,
and that's what they
call.
Did.
I know Q2 revenue and cloud up
54%. You didn't want to work at Waymo after that?
And YouTube numbers were almost a double in terms of ads.
No, I know.
Incredible.
I know we have to go to Carl.
All right. We got to get to Carl. We got to get to Boeing.
We have a Boeing. Oh, my God. That's another one that David probably thinks isn't that good.
We're going to pack this hour. Let's get to Boeing up in the pre-market. Surprise profit and a lot of news on production rates and everything else. Phil LeBeau, good morning.
Good morning, Carl. I am joined by Dave Calhoun, president and CEO of Boeing. A surprise profit, first time since Q3 of 2019. Some people will look at this and they'll say, well, you're delivering more MAXes and that's the only reason why. But you had a number of drivers in here that I think people may not have fully appreciated, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's good to be with you, Phil.
I will
recall the last time in person was pre-COVID.
Yes.
So anyway, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was a great quarter. We are in a transition year. We've talked about that. This is indicative of that transition. Nowhere near where we want to be when we get a full recovery, but clearly on a good path to get there. The market is coming back, as we've discussed, mostly domestic traffic, narrow bodies, and we are about halfway through the return to service on our MAX products, and they're performing incredibly well. Customers are happy with it. Flying public is happy with it. So we're feeling very good about that. Our defense business, very, very solid quarter. Absent the charges that unfortunately investors became accustomed to for a while, but for good reasons. We are really working on the stability of the overall operations and, very importantly, investing in the tanker, which is a critical asset for the warfighter. Finally, as you heard yesterday from our engine suppliers, the services market, as fleets are returned to service, is beginning to hum. And so we had a good lift in our global services business.
Let's talk about the 737 MAX. You have increased deliveries, but as you see the COVID variant spreading around the country, spreading around the world, two questions here. One, does it impact your production schedule? Does it impact how you think the global recovery will happen in terms of commercial air travel? We've seen a real resurgence. Does it pull back, or do you think we're going to power through this as an industry?
It's not helpful. That's clear. I don't think this is going to have severe repercussions. I really don't. The one thing that we have cleared with the flying public and with the help of all of our customers is that the safest indoor spot you can be in with respect to transmission is, in fact, the fuselage of an airplane. And people know that now, and everybody's knowledgeable about it. That helps a lot. I do think it slows down the development of protocols around the world such that the wide-body return, it may elongate it somewhat. I still think we are completely dependent on distribution of that vaccine and penetration of the vaccine in every population. That is the most important track that we can follow.
You talk about wide bodies. Let's talk about the 787 Dreamliner. Yep. You have halted deliveries while you are working on the inspection process, working out some type of an agreement ultimately with the FAA. But as you're uncovering more problems, critics are looking at you guys and saying, look, is there a problem with the execution and the manufacturing of commercial aircraft at Boeing? Because it seems like there's one problem after another.
Yeah.
Is there a problem?
Well, let me start just by characterizing it. This is Boeing being tough on Boeing. Right, we started the inspection process from nose to tail because When we get to rate recovery, let's assume rate recovery starts in the second half of next year, and I believe strongly that it will. When we get to that moment, we have to be perfect. We have one site. We've got to get every quality issue that's ever found its way into an airplane, and we got to get it out, and we got to get it solved at its source. And that's what we're doing. We've had enormous help from our supply chain. These are very complex, very precise fixes to that, to the airplane. Nowhere near the safety window, but clearly things we want to do to stabilize that overall production system. Most of these conditions were pre-existing almost from the start. So as we work our way through them, we're going to be that much better when recovery comes. Our team has demonstrated an awful lot of courage to go out and find them and then to fix them, and they're working transparently with the FAA. And the FAA, every step of the way, has worked with us. They're good. They're thorough. They do their job. We have to give them time to do it. But this is all good for Boeing. That recovery, when it comes, we have to be ready, and we have to be great when it's here.
Dave, Jim's got a question for you. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you, Phil. Dave, first, congratulations on a quarter that I think few were looking for. There are a lot of people who feel that the timeline of Boeing being back and the timeline for aerospace returning to its glory is 2024. When I look at these, 2024, when I look at your numbers, I'm almost thinking, let's say your stock goes to 300, you could actually offer $5 billion in stock. I wouldn't mind that. But if maybe this is a 2023 turnaround, and the people who say 2024 are, quite frankly, Dave, too negative.
Well, honestly, I do believe that question and the presumption in it is correct. We have to be ready for recovery in 23 and significant recovery. Domestic travel is already returning. We're getting close to where we were pre-COVID, and then we will get back on that growth track. I do think the protocols between countries and the harmonization of the protocols and then vaccine penetration as we move into through course of 2022, I believe by the time we get to the second half of 22, all of the airlines around the world are going to be planning for and beginning to bring up their international operations. So nothing's certain, but yes, I share that point of view. I'm more optimistic than I have been in quite a while on that front. And it is part of the reason why we stabilized our employment and sent the message to our folks that we're done with the cuts, we're done with minimizing rates, and it's time to get ready for maximizing rates.
All right, did we worry about execution? Is it time to get out to the factory floor, let's say four times a week, and then fly to Beijing several times? Because yeah. China's yeah. the key. Why should we wait for the U.S. government to help you?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And by the way, we do all of that. Probably the first 2 months of this year, Phil and I were talking. I was in South Carolina. I moved to South Carolina so that we set up this program the way it is. And I'm very proud of that team for what they're doing. Every week we go through it. Every decision they make, we're all together. And I believe it's all for the long-term good of our people and the flying public. Anyway, so we do all of that. We similarly work on our relationships in China, which are very constructive. We work directly with the airlines. They have 100 airplanes, MAXs, on the ground that want to get back in the air. The CAAC continues to work with us. They're thorough. They're good. It's been constructive, and it's moving forward. So I do feel good about all of that. The bigger tensions with China, they are going to be what they're going to be. But our relationships and our willingness to work closely with our Chinese customer, it's there, and we're going to continue down that path. I remain optimistic on that.
Dave, you were talking about the bigger tensions with China. All of this comes down to whether or not the policy changes. You don't want to get into that discussion. What you want to do is do business. And we haven't seen a large order from a Chinese airline, 4 years, 5 years for Boeing? At what point do you become worried that if there is not a new order coming along, you're going to have to change your production rates?
Well, I probably look into the middle of next year, and that is that moment when we've got to resurrect that order book now. The order book hasn't gone to the other guy yet, right? So they similarly have been in a bit of a vacuum. Our government is well aware that if we cede the Chinese market, the Europeans will simply fill it. And that will be the difference between world leadership or not. And that represents roughly 1 million jobs in our supply chain, including the Boeing assembly operations. So There is cognizant on the administration's part about what how meaningful that is. There is a need in the Chinese side of this one to do it. We will be the free trade spokesperson. We will work hard to do everything we can for our Chinese customer. And I'm optimistic that we will move down that path.
Quickly, I want to ask you about something that increasingly corporations are facing, and that's data security, data breaches, whether it's ransomware attacks, whatever it might be. Do you find yourself and your executive team spending more time than ever focused on making sure that there are not data breaches and that your networks and your operations are secure?
Absolutely. It's mandatory, of course, for us. We serve our military and our
sure.
warfighter, so it's mandatory in every way you can think of. We're pretty good at it, and yet we wake up every day scared to death because we are attacked on a very regular basis, just like everybody else in corporate America. So that happens to us. We know how to remediate. We know how to get ahead of it. And in some cases, we play offense with our partners in the military. So there's a lot we know about it. It's real. Every company's investing, you know, hand over fist in it, and we have to. We simply have to.
You've got the Starliner launch coming up on Friday.
Yeah.
And we talked last year about the importance of this. We all know what happened with your guys' previous launch.
Yep.
Do you feel there's been a portrayal of Boeing being behind when it comes to the space race, if you will? Do you feel that way, or do you feel that you're still in position to capitalize on the opportunities that are there?
Yeah, no. I feel very strongly that we will capitalize on those opportunities. We operate in deep space. That's what Boeing does. And it has its set of challenges, and we think we're pretty good at it. I can't wait for Friday. I am optimistic, confident in every way I can be that we're going to have a successful, you know, tag with the space station. We're ready for the crewed flight. We can't wait for that one to happen as well. And it will keep moving. We're also ready. The space launch system itself is now standing vertical. It's unbelievably impressive. And all of this has gone on while we've been battling COVID. So, I'm very confident in it. We have real vested interest in space. Space is going to be a good market for us, and we're going to continue to invest in it.
Dave, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
It's good to be here in person.
It sure is.
Yeah,
almost
2 years since we did this last. Guys, we'll send it back to you on a big day for Boeing as they beat the street with Q2 numbers at surprise profit.
Yeah, Phil, great stuff. It looks like Boeing is going to add at least 80 points to the Dow at the open. Got some more big CEO interviews on tap. Do not miss Kevin Johnson of Starbucks and AMD's Lisa Su later on this hour. Lots of earnings to get to this morning, and futures pretty steady ahead of a Fed decision later today. More Squawk on the Street straight ahead. Pair of tech giants rising after posting quarterly beats. Google parent Alphabet gets a lift from that surge in online ad spend, while Microsoft's results were driven by growth in cloud. Looking at some of the price targets this morning on Alphabet, Jim, $31.50 over at MKM, $31.55 at B of A. A lot of three handles today.
Well, I'm going to offer some caution of what could turn things around, although I mean, Chapel Star Stone's Alphabet, and I thought it was an amazing quarter. There will be people who say, well, wait a second. If you combine what the CDC is saying with the variant that has us wearing masks again, that will cut travel advertising, which is so important to Alphabet. And I think you're going to hear that narrative in the Fang is Dead. By 2 o'clock, we'll have a lot of Fang is Dead commentary, which will be incorrect, but so what? And I really want to urge people to strap yourself to the mask, because this was a perfect quarter. YouTube, great. We're going to be hearing more about Google Cloud, which was great. Very positive commentary about Waymo, but search was fantastic. And I know that the negativists are going to be very quick. This stock was up 100 and it was down at one point. To be able to say, wait a second, the world is closing again. The reopening trade is done.
So, yeah.
Well, David, I don't know if you heard the CDC.
I did. I did. Listen, we've had this digitization take place. We all know it in a year. By the way, they're coming off of what was a flat year-over-year number. So
right.
They were up 57% constant currency. And they weren't down 20 to 19. They were just flat 20 to 19. So a 55%+, let's call it, over 2019 numbers. It's incredible.
It is incredible.
We're not talking at all, though, about, I mean, obviously, the size of these companies, the power that they have. YouTube, we all know the rabbit hole that can be for some conspiracy theorists and the like.
Right.
Continued focus of regulation. That doesn't seem to be something people are overly concerned about,
none of the
at least
analysts
on the investor side.
None of the analysts. And I think, David, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you want to reach certain people, what they said is you can reach them on YouTube that you can't get on TV at a fraction
real
of the cost
quick,
of TV.
Jim, Facebook tonight, what do these numbers mean for Facebook?
Well, unless Facebook decides to self-immolate, the numbers are going to be excellent.
That's been the theme of the week so far, and we will get more on Microsoft after the break. Shares of AMD and Starbucks going in some opposite directions today following their respective earnings reports. We're going to talk to the CEOs of both companies after the opening bell, which starts in about 7 minutes. Shortly after the opening bell, do not miss AMD's Lisa Su, followed by Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson, as Squawk on the Street returns in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
All right, we got so much to get to today. Let's get to a mad dash, though, before an opening bell. McDonald's is another company that just reported earnings.
The BTS meal showcased the pillars of a growth strategy. I might want to ask Carl about that in a second. But here's the issue with a stock like McDonald's. This stock has been up endlessly, but I thought this quarter was terrific. And they're saying some good things about staffing. They're saying some good things about what happens when you open a place. But when you listen to the CDC, you say, oh, my, is this going to be another case where the great reopening is postponed? Because that's going to hurt McDonald's. So overall, I thought it was a terrific quarter. I think they're doing a lot of right things. The numbers themselves are rather big in terms of what they're doing, same store sales. So, David, I like the quarter very much.
Stock's not looking to be up when we start trading in about 50 seconds.
I think that it's up so much. And, Carl, you know the company very much. And this is a quarter that you would have dreamed for. They got the same store sales 2-year up 14.9. You got to be impressed.
Up 15 on a 2-year stack. 70% of U.S. dining rooms are open. And they think 100% will be open by Labor Day. To your point about restrictions.
So the stock, let's not necessarily take our cue from the stock. Take our cue from the quarter, which was quite excellent. That's what I have to say.
There's the opening bell and the CNBC real-time exchange of the big board. It's a power school celebrating an IPO at the NASDAQ. A Duolingo also celebrating an IPO. And we'll talk to the co-founder and CEO later this morning. Tech Check.
Say is that the Richmond Greyhounds, the people who watched them did not cheer as much as these guys. And there, of course, I'm talking about Ted Lasso, David.
Love Ted Lasso.
You haven't watched Ted Lasso?
Not happy with Apple, but I love Ted Lasso.
There you go.
Yeah.
He did something.
I love Ted Lasso. Although we haven't watched it yet. It just came out, July 23rd, I think it was released.
Right.
Looking forward to watching it.
A lot of my friends are buzzing about it, which is
I mean, the second season. Watch the first season.
And my wife and I found something to watch together, Lisa. The first time, feel good.
Yeah.
It was a feel-good show.
One more way in which Apple's getting into our lives. Azure, Jim, up 45. And they are guiding similarly for the quarter to come, which is sort of a pivot point of debate on Microsoft today.
It's funny. They use this term, relatively stable. And I found that that was like the duck coming down with Groucho Marx. I mean, suddenly we said, wait a second. I just heard something that's negative. And the stock dropped 5 quick points. I parsed everything that they had to say, and Amy Hood has never been, the CFO, has never been this bullish. And if they got rid of all they had to do was say it's stable to positive, which it probably will be, and the stock would even be higher. But I think that when people speak to Microsoft, they realize it's still their time. And these Azure numbers, I'm only used to them for being small cap companies to have that kind of growth.
Right. I mean, their commercial cloud, this is not all of Azure. Commercial cloud is $69 billion in annual revenue. That's an annual number. It was up 34%. Obviously, we like to look at AWS. We'll get a snapshot of that towards the end of the week when Amazon reports. Microsoft, and then, of course, we also heard from Alphabet. Alphabet, the smallest, but growing the fastest, I believe,
right. Yes.
At least based on these last quarterly numbers.
But you have things like LinkedIn doing $10 billion, up 27%. You have Xbox demand continuing. I thought this was interesting. This is a Ryan Cohen issue. The mean people should actually be buying GameStop off this. Demand continued to exceed supply. Now, I hate to ever say anything positive about those guys because they hate me so much, but demand continuing to exceed supply for the Xbox is good for GameStop.
Right.
GME, by the way, is going to join the S&P MidCap 400. And I saw a flash head that they're going to rebrand in Canada as EB Games, Jim. Stock's down about 1%, but we'll watch GameStop today.
When I listen to what Brian Goldenrider say and what Mattel is saying, and then most importantly, perhaps what Logitech is saying, which is, makes gear, it made me again bullish on GameStop, which is that he's talking about, here we're talking about Bracken Darrell, that the EV games, that they're going to be so big, that people want to play these games so much, which is what I've been urging. I've been urging Ryan Cohen, who, of course, is the savior of GameStop, to do this. But he's very opaque on his plans.
We're going to get to AMD in just a second. Didn't want to hit Spotify because those shares are down 8%. Right. The company also reporting numbers. Total monthly average users up 22% at Spotify. 365 million people for the quarter around the globe. But that was a bit below expectations.
Right.
Now, I have heard that they've been telling investors they weren't marketing, that they were not actively marketing during the quarter. They've resumed that. And perhaps that will ameliorate some of the concerns around a number that came in a bit below guidance and what the street had looked for. But you can see Spotify shares are down 7%.
Brazil and India, growth markets for them that they're not doing much in.
Right, that they weren't doing a lot of marketing in.
All
yes.
Right. Very good. Now we're going to talk to a stock that should be up much more, but we've got a real negative tone to the market. Shares of AMD are indeed, though, higher this morning. And that follows incredibly strong Q2 results. Chipmaker also raising its full-year revenue guidance. Joining us now exclusively, AMD CEO Lisa Su. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jim. Good morning, Carl and David. Great to be with you today.
Now, Lisa, I want to focus on the demand side for a moment. It seems like there's demand throughout the chain, including for AMD Enterprise. Every chip seems to have a buyer and then some. Is that a correct interpretation of this quarter?
Yeah, I think that's very correct, Jim. I mean, it's a very strong demand environment. And in particular, we're seeing very strong preference for AMD products across our business. You know, we're very happy with our results. We nearly doubled revenue, doubled operating margins, tripled profitability. So it was a very strong quarter. And it starts with, you know, Jesse, there's very high demand. We're in the right markets and, our products are doing very well.
Well, I know that you have always been loath, as many times as I try to get you to do, to knock the competition. But you did say this time, a little break of what I regard as being your lack of willingness to slam anyone, you say, we continue to gain revenue share. And that what that means is, you know, we're focusing on the most strategic segments of the PC market. That was always the bailiwick of a company called Intel. So you must be continuing to be ahead of Intel when it comes to the chips that these PC makers want.
Well, you know, as you know, the PC market has been very strong for very strong last year, very strong the first half of this year. You know, we've been focused on the most strategic segments of the PC market. So things like, notebooks have been very strong, gaming notebooks, premium consumer notebooks, commercial notebooks. And we've done well. And so, yes, we believe we gained revenue share. It was a record for our PC business. And we continue to believe that we're having more customers actually prefer, AMD, just given the strength of our products and the work that we're doing with our customers.
All right, let's go to Italy for a second. Rome, very popular chip. Milan exceeding Rome in terms of popularity. You've got Genoa next. Let's turn that into something our viewers understand, not just the companies that order. What you're saying is as you get smaller and more powerful chips, it seems like you're pulling away from companies with this roadmap that you have.
Well, the data center, I mean, you talk about it a lot, with cloud and what's going on in enterprise and for, high performance, supercomputing. I mean, it's a growth market. It's a secular growth market that is, really, really strategic to AMD. It's strategic to the world if you think about all of the infrastructure and everything that we're powering. And so we laid out this long-term roadmap. And as you said, it's actually a map through Italy. But Rome was our second generation data center product. It's done very well. It's done very well, particularly amongst, both cloud and supercomputing, sort of the largest computers in the world. And then we just recently launched Milan. And again, that is going very well. We doubled Milan shipments in the second quarter, and that'll continue to grow into the second half of the year. And then, we don't stop there, Jim. I mean, this is is all about always bringing, you know, the best to the marketplace. So our next generation chip is called Genoa, and that'll come out next year in 5-nanometer technology, and that's right on track. So it's about always giving our customers and really the market more performance so that we can do all these great things we want to do with computing.
Yeah, as we're speaking, I want to urge people who are selling the stock to understand that this was as perfect a quarter as I've seen, but maybe perfection doesn't intrigue people anymore. One thing that I was disappointed in was that I'm just praying that the authorities, it's out of your hands, will approve Xilinx, which you mentioned in the quarter as being something that you really want to diversify into. If you could just describe from what, I don't know how opaque the regulators are, Lisa, but if you could describe what regulators might be concerned about, it would certainly assuage my feeling that Xilinx will indeed get done this year.
Well, look, Jim, we're very excited about the Xilinx acquisition. We think it's good for technology. I think it's good for our customers because we can really, optimize technologies together. It's good for the company because we'll diversify our overall revenue base. We were encouraged in the second quarter in that we passed some key regulatory milestones, including unconditional approval by the EU and by the UK. And we're going through our regulatory process, and I would say it's going exactly as we expected it to go. So these things take a little bit of time, but, you know, we believe that we're on track to close by the end of this year. And I think what you'll see from the combination of, you know, AMD with the strength in our computing capabilities and Xilinx with their strength in adaptive computing will just be a force, a really exciting, company as we come together. So very much on track, very much as we expected. And it's just a process that we're working through at this point.
Lisa, it's David. A quick diversionary question here from me on the topic of bringing people back to the office. You know, I'm just curious, have you made your final decisions in terms of what your expectations are for your workforce, what they want versus what you want? Is it the same thing? And what does it look like?
Well, David, thanks for that question. And I will say, you know, first of all, I'm so proud of, you know, our AMD employees. I mean, I think we've executed very well. Through this last, 15, 16 months, it's been difficult, for everyone. What we've taken very much is a manner of we're working with our employees in various geographies. We're a global company. So depending on the geography, you have different elements of the pandemic. Right now, we're giving people a lot of flexibility in terms of how they do that. So we do have some people starting to return to the office, but we're doing it in a very, a flexible fashion, and I think people are happy with that. So I feel great about the execution. I think that's one of the things that's key is whether we're in the office or we're working from home or we're working from anywhere, that we're able to execute on all of our roadmaps and all of our commitments to our customers, which is absolutely critical.
But Lisa, real quick, do you expect that you're going to have people back in the office full time? Is it only going to be 2 days a week? Do you have a sense for that?
Yeah, what we've said is we expect people to mostly come back to the office, at least 3 days a week. And then we've given people plenty of flexibility. So if you have any situation that, would be difficult, then, we've said, fine, let's make sure that we work it out. And we'll, we do believe that, there is collaboration that you benefit from when you're together. But we also understand that people need flexibility. And again, our business allows that, as you can see from the strong execution that we've shown.
Lisa Su, it is great to have you on this show. Congratulations for everything you've done for shareholders. It's been a remarkable run, and it's always great to see you.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, Carl, back to you.
Right. Thanks. When we come back, we'll talk to Starbucks' Kevin Johnson in another First on CNBC interview. First, though, take a look at the bond report. Let's look at Treasuries this morning with the Fed statement due out in just a few hours from now. Yields are up across the board, 10 years right around 126. We're back in a moment.
NASDAQ getting killed here. Shares of Starbucks on the NASDAQ moving lower despite an earnings beat. Joining us now, first on CNBC, is Starbucks President and CEO Kevin Johnson. Kevin, we always enjoy you coming on the show. Good or bad, I thought this was a good one, but welcome.
Well, good morning, Jim.
Kevin, you're doing something that I didn't think was possible. It is very clear that you're doing custom-made at scale. Is that technology? Is that your team being proficient? Or is it just you have the right drinks and people just know what to ask for and you guys are ready?
Jim, you know, one of the key differentiators of Starbucks is the fact that we've got a great beverage platform that resonates with customers, and it's customized, it's personalized for each and every customer. And you're seeing that's one of the things that is powering these record results. You know, you point out we had a significant beat on top line revenue, a significant beat on earnings per share. And this was a record quarter. And in many ways, it was a record quarter because of the customer experience we create in our stores, the beverage platforms that we've introduced, and digital. And those three elements, the customer experience, beverage, and digital, are powering these results.
All right. Now, just so you know, David, we want to post this for you. Google's down today. So you know, it's barely up. So you know that it doesn't really matter what Starbucks says. Kevin, I think there's very interesting. People are going to say, well, wait a second. Why is it down? And there was a J.P. Morgan analyst who basically said the ticket was actually down in China, which isn't very common, especially in an inflationary environment, and that China is not doing well. Can you put that in context, please?
Well, the best way to look at this, Jim, is if you look at revenue growth in China over a two-year period. So let's just take fiscal year 19. We grew revenue 23% in China over fiscal year 19. Two-year revenue growth, 23%. That's double-digit top-line growth. And, you know, much of that is a combination of our new stores that we're opening. The new stores we're opening in China are performing at higher revenue levels and higher profitability than prior generations, which means the brand is resonating with our customers. And so, you know, I think this was a record quarter in China. When you look at that top line revenue growth, the new stores that we've opened, and the fact that we've increased digital customer relationships in China to over 17 million. And so the brand continues to resonate very well in China. You know, our comps have accelerated, two-year comps have accelerated, and we post 23% two-year revenue growth in China.
All right, Kevin, the wise guys are telling me, well, wait a second, coffee went up 50% last week. I tell them that you actually thought that coffee could go up, and you prepared for that. So could you explain to people how it's possible that Starbucks is not being hurt by the rising price of coffee?
Well, certainly, you know, if you look at the commodities price of coffee, the C price, you know, it's gone up significantly lately. A lot of that is due to weather in Brazil. But what people don't know is, you know, at Starbucks, we have a coffee buying strategy that we buy our green coffee 12 to 18 months in advance. So we are already price locked for more than 14 months, which means we've already purchased the green coffee that we need, the Arabica coffee, you know, certainly for the rest of this fiscal year and for most of fiscal year 22. And we've got it warehoused. So, you know, not only do we have a great cost basis for that coffee, but we have a supply, adequate supply. We're not going to run out of coffee, and we're going to have it at a good cost.
Kevin, it's David. On that note, though, in terms of inflation, your CFO on the call did say that your operating margin's tempered by two factors, one of which is rising global inflation requiring continued incremental investments to support growth, and rising wages. Your goal, of course, to get to $15 in the U.S. in line with the announcement you made. So are operating margins going to be tempered for the foreseeable future as a result?
Well, David, you got to consider we saw significant expansion in operating margin this quarter, and that's even with these inflationary headwinds. And so Rachel did highlight the fact that there are some inflationary headwinds, and I think certainly you know, we're going to continue to invest in our partners. You know, we've always done that at Starbucks, and we're going to continue to make the wage investments that we think are appropriate to recognize them for the great work they are doing to create that great experience for our customers in the stores. And so, you know, I see that as a good investment.
Right. But what are your expectations when it comes to inflation beyond, obviously, the inventory of coffee you have where you can sort of offset it? Is it something you're concerned about preparing for or feel like you kind of know where things are headed?
Yeah, I'd say it's something that we know where things are headed and we've prepared for it and we're not concerned. I think, you know, the combination of, you know, we can use price in some cases, but we've got so much efficiency that we're getting off of, you know, the leverage that we're getting as we scale up in our stores. You know, we can offset some of that inflationary pressure, you know, in terms of operating efficiency, some of it through price, And a lot of it through just being smart about how we run our business. And that's why our coffee sourcing strategy, you know, I think is a big asset. There are no other companies that I know of that buy that far in advance and have that kind of safety net. And so I think that's going to give us a competitive advantage.
Hey, okay, Kevin.
So, I'm sorry.
Really quick, the market at large is wrestling with this Delta variant. We're watching UK cases which have been concerning, but they've also been cut in half over 10 days. I just wonder how you are absorbing that data and what the trigger point is for closing a store, say, in the UK or maybe in the US.
You know, Carl, we manage our stores market by market, and what I think right now we have a solution to this pandemic, and it's the vaccinations. And so, you know, as long as we stay on the front foot, getting as many people vaccinated as we can around the world, we're going to continue to overcome this. And if it means wearing masks in our stores, we're happy to do that, and we've been doing that throughout this quarter. You know, I looked at just in geographies in the United States that had more spread of this latest variant, and candidly, their same store comps were higher than the national average. So I don't see this impacting us. We have store protocols. We can rapidly adapt to whatever happens with this variant. But the fact that there's vaccine out there, there's a solution to this. And I think the more the world gets access to that vaccine and we help people get vaccinated, it's just going to keep getting better and better.
Kevin, there is something going on with the American consumer. The stark thing that I saw, cold beverage. I mean, is cold beverage just taking over hot?
Yeah, you know, Jim, I mentioned this mix shift. We saw, I think, 74% of all beverages this last quarter in the United States were cold beverage. And look, much of that is driven by the innovation that we've brought to market in cold brew, nitro cold brew, iced shaken espresso beverages, our refreshers. Those are all coffee-based cold beverages. And I tell you, the really positive thing about this is cold beverages really resonate with the Gen Z and the millennial generation. That younger generation, is really embracing those cold beverages. And, that's driving premium beverages and more customization, which is also helping us expand margin.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you for coming on. I know that the stock market's not rewarding anything right now. But once again, Starbucks back, doing terrific. Kevin Johnson, CEO of Starbucks. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll take a break here. As Jim says, tape is wrestling a bit. Dow's gone negative. We only got a couple of sectors green, among them healthcare, energy, and communication services, although the VIX has come in a bit. A lot more after a break. Don't go away. Got plenty of choices tonight.
Yeah, Carl, the market is angry. Wingstop, one of the greatest performers of our generation. People saying the costs are going up. They're just looking for something to say why Charlie's not doing well, which, of course, he is. And Rockwell Automation, so many doubters in this one, but they are in. When you need to build an EV factory, it's Rockwell Automation. Once again, a great quarter, but nobody cares. We're in a nobody cares environment, which means people want it to go down. People are buying puts. People are so thrilled to be negative. Yeah. So let them be negative. We didn't drive
of the things we didn't out. Get to, right? Shopify, IMAX, Garmin, Mondelez, T-Doc, Mattel, Six. What did we miss?
The only one that is Shopify wasn't bad at all, but I knew they were going to be because they said something cautionary. It's going to go. Mattel had nothing cautionary, and there's something.
Yeah, Mattel although not great. The Hasbro like blowout that we got earlier in
no,
the week.
No, but the stock did go up ahead of it. Now McDonald's is typical of this market. Oh, it's been up. That's why. Let's sell it. I mean, the let's sell it crowd, which includes my partner here to my left, is
wait, what?
You say let's sell it.
When have I ever said anything like that?
Well, you haven't really. I just was using you as a foil.
Yes.
Okay, just trying to make sure I'm paying
you're
attention.
You're a foil.
Yes, I am a foil.
Okay, you're a foil.
And sometimes I'm a fool.
Well, no, you're never a fool. But, yeah, people want to be negative today. Let them be negative. Let them sell. We'll catch it lower. Let them sell. Let them be just unhappy.
Jim, we'll see you at 6. Money, of course, with Jim Cramer. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.